Warning, the Stone Age Gamer includes a lot of bad language. Cover your motherfucking ears.
Good evening and welcome to the Stone Age Gamer Podcast. I'm Chris Randazzo and joining me tonight is Open Book, Dan Ryan.
Man, just and like tattered pages, I'm fucking dog-eared, it's terrible.
What do you do when you can't think of a good topic for your podcast? You do an AMA! Get ready to have your queries quelled because the Stone Age Gamer Podcast starts now.
That was good, your queries quelled.
Thank you.
Good.
I was doing some killer alliteration last week when I wrote this. I was
alliteration is wonderful.
I'm a big fan. Anyway, hi everyone. This is episode 336. It is the week of December 11th, 2020.
Maybe. Sure.
Well, just
yes.
Double check the old calendar. To make sure I'm not making shit up. real quick, before we get started, there's something we could use your help with. We are trying to work at a bug of sorts, and it would really help us if you could take just a second, go to the Geekade Discord. The link is in the show notes. Visit the channel Bug Fix. It's in, the tech section or whatever, but there's a channel called Bug Fix. Read the pinned message, and that's it. That's all there is to it. It should only take a second, and it would really help us out. The more people we can get to do this, the more helpful it'll be. So thank you very much for advance. Business in advance, not for advance. I mean, thank you for Game Boy Advance. That was great. Anyway,
that was
business
good.
Behind us, Dan. System. How? I think I liked it. It's a good system. How you doing? What's new? What's popping?
What? Ew! Don't do that.
What's the happy haps?
Yeah. Oh, that's exactly what all the cool kids are saying. Walking around the mall in their masks.
That's right. Like,
what up, my dude?
I am.
What's the happy haps?
I am. I took all of my cues on coolness from the TV show Scrubs. So.
Whoops.
Nailed it. What's new and exciting in the world of Dan?
Oh, man. Nothing, actually. It has been a pretty uneventful week, sir.
Huh.
Really haven't done much. Yeah, I mean, honestly. I had my electrician come out last week and install some outlets outside, and now I have Christmas lights, and they make me very happy. I've played just way more of the show than I should, shirking other responsibilities, just laughing in the face of, like, dishes, laundry, there is baseball to be played. It's just such a rewarding and challenging game. I enjoy it so much. It's very zen. Like, and not just the actual, like, gameplay aspect of it, but then, like, all the management on the back end of signing people to contracts and making trades and trying to be realistic about trade proposals and feeling bad about, like, well, this guy's been with the team for a few years, but it kind of sucks now, so fuck him. And off he goes, and oh, it's a whirlwind of emotions, Chris.
Yikes.
Well, yeah. No,
similarly,
that's it.
I would like to offer my blanket condolences to my wife's gigantic Steelers fan. Apparently, they just lost their first game of the season to the Washington football team.
The Washington, not Redskins, football team. Man, yeah. How do you lose? Those guys suck. They're real bad.
Yeah, everything was going really well, apparently, and then I was putting the kids to bed because, you know, they're playing at, you know, the 5 o'clock on a Monday night, and the first half of the game's going great. I'm putting the kids to bed, and then, like, all of a sudden she's like, they fucking scored. All of a sudden they decided to be good. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. And then right before the show, she came down for a rally shot. I'm like, oh, so it's going like that, huh?
And it's going real well.
Just poked on Facebook and saw my friend Rich say that with music notes, we lost our game to a team with no name.
Oh, that's good. No, the Giants beat the Seahawks yesterday, Chris, as we are recording this. So a week ago, as you are listening to this, and that shouldn't have happened. The Seahawks are a much better team, and the Giants' starting quarterback, even though he kind of sucks, is injured. So the backup Colt McCoy was in there. Yet the Giants won.
Huh.
Well. It's been a very odd football. It's been very hard to watch football this year. Not because of like the lack of crowds or whatever. Because I've gotten used to that at this point. You know, between watching wrestling and baseball and basketball and whatever, the lack of crowds isn't the weird thing. It's just been a very odd season across the league. The Giants have broken the legs of like four starting quarterbacks so Yikes. Far this season. Yeah, which is like pretty tough. It's pretty hardcore. Oh no.
Speaking of hardcore, sorry, I was just I'm looking at a listing on eBay. Sony mm-hmm. PlayStation 5 console disc version image only. Please read description. Description: you are buying a piece of paper with an image of a PS5 printed on it. $499 plus $785 shipping. Quantity: one sold, two available. Somebody didn't read the fine print.
Somebody did not read the goddamn description. See, I'm okay with that.
Oh yeah,
not okay with actual scalpers, but yeah. Like if you're just stupid, then that's nobody else's fault but your own, and you should stop being so stupid.
I mean, it's like it couldn't be more bold in the description.
Yeah,
it's kind of amazing.
Yeah, stupid people going to stupid, Chris.
Yeah, how's that? I don't even know how that's all going. By the way, I checked out of looking, trying to follow what's going on with the next generation of consoles.
Oh, I don't know. People are still furious at Sony for not making enough and furious at Xbox for not making enough, and mm-hmm. everybody's super happy with the ones that they have, and this has never happened before, and it's yeah. never been this bad, and God, I hope they really learn their lesson for the next one, and yeah, whatever. It's the same stupid shit every single time. And like, I don't know why anyone is surprised. It baffles me.
Especially right now. Like,
yeah.
There was no way they were going to be able to produce a metric ton of these things. Well, I mean, I guess they could. They weigh like 75 pounds a pop, but you know what I mean.
Oh, look at that. Physics jokes. It's getting smart up in here.
Imagining the difference between the factory making PS5s and the factory making Xboxes. One factory is just like all these weird curved pieces of white plastic, and the other one's just like, it's a fucking box. Clamp.
Clamp. I know. Internet's a fucking weird place, man.
You ain't kidding.
It's a weird place.
All right, let's see. All right, so you just played a bunch of the show. We have a ridiculous AMA that I'm really looking forward to getting to, so let me get through, let me blow through this real quick. Let's see. I played Christmas Nights this year because I do it every year. It's still wonderful. I competed in that Tetris 99 tournament this weekend that was Super Mario All-Stars themed. That was pretty neat. Beat new Super Mario Brothers. Huzzah. Nice. And I finally started Galaxy, and it's so good.
Is
it? Oh my God, it's so good. It's all right. I mean, I haven't played the game since it came out. I remember it extraordinarily fondly. It translates remarkably well to HD. Like, I remember when they did Twilight Princess HD and thinking, like, man, that game's going to look amazing in HD. And then they did. I'm like, oh no.
It doesn't, as a matter of fact.
That fuzziness really helped. Ow! Galaxy, on the other hand, is... that game's art direction is spotless. So, it's really interesting the way that they made it work on the Switch. Like, seriously, I said this before, and now I definitely mean it, that collection, like, Sunshine and 64 are a friggin' bonus. Like, that's fun.
Yeah.
Have fun. Galaxy is when 3D Mario games got legitimately good. Because, you know, you quit playing Super Mario because of 64.
And God, I hate it so much.
Sunshine, I think there's really a lot of fun to be had in Sunshine, but there's no doubt that it's like it's one of those really fun games for a while, but it definitely has some flaws. Galaxy, sure. I have been nonstop impressed of just every single level. Like, wow, man, the level of polish here is night and day, because I've never played the 3D ones back to back to back like this before. And even with the gap of New Super Mario Brothers, Galaxy, from a pure quality perspective, is, pun very much intended, light years beyond what the other two were. Just out of this world.
How much was... Yeah, I'm just going to let that go. How much was Miyamoto involved in that one?
I have absolutely no idea.
Okay.
I could look just it up, out of curiosity. But I'm not going to.
But I don't want to.
I don't want to. So anyway, what's cool about this, right? So you can tell that this game was designed for the Wii, because it totally was. The whole...
Sure.
The game was designed to be nunchuck in one hand, moving Mario around, and then the pointer constantly pointing at the screen, picking up star bits and shaking around doing all that stuff. It is so clearly, like, they didn't change that aspect of it, which I'm kind of glad they didn't. There's something really intrinsically weird about it, because I'm playing with the Pro Controller. I tried it with the two Joy-Cons, and, you know, it wasn't quite right, because I'm used to... The thing about the Joy-Cons is it's doing it based on gyro, which is, now that I'm a little more used to it with the Pro Controller, I suppose I could go back to it, but at the same time, I just don't want to, because I really think that the Pro Controller is really well suited for this, and it's such a crazy workaround how well it works. Like, so the pointer is just based on the gyro of the Pro Controller.
Sure.
Which is wild, because it's constantly drifting. So you constantly have to reset it, which at first I thought to myself, well, I mean, I guess that's kind of a hassle, but then it's not at all, because no matter where you shift while you're playing, centering is always just a click away. It's not like you have to do something to center it. The R button is just center the grip. So if I shift in the original game, I always had to be pointing at the television, right? Because it's, you're basically using a pointer. This is, I could be facing the wall and just say, this is where my center is now. And it kind of frees you up to do a lot of things. Like, there's this one level where I had to race against a Boo to go through this kind of like space maze where these blue stars that you have to grab onto, and you grab a star and it creates a gravitational pull. And so the trick is that you want to try to not bring yourself to that star, but start your inertia and then pick the next one, so you keep flying faster and faster and kind of weaving in and out of this maze, and not having to really align myself with the screen, but just kind of sit off to the side wherever I was comfortable and just be like, this is my center now, and then do a couple shots and then be like, this is my center now as the camera turns. Like, you can really kind of game it and work it in ways that you couldn't do on the original version, which I think is really cool.
That is cool.
It's a neat fix, and it kind of makes me wonder how well it would work with something like Skyward Sword, because that one's more gesture than pointer, but the gestures, I think, or at least the aiming and stuff in Skyward Sword, I think mostly was done with the gyro too. So I'd be curious to see if they could actually make that work, but they also changed all that stuff to touchscreen on handheld mode, which is pretty cool.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, which is kind of nice, but then at the same time, like, you have to keep taking your hand off of the Joy-Con that has the buttons on it in order to use the star bit grabber thingy. So playing it on the TV with a Pro Controller is, I think, my actual favorite way to play this game now, which is not something I expected, but God, it's pretty, and John is just so in love with it.
That's awesome.
Completely and totally in love with it, because even he can see the difference in quality. It's like, yeah, this was neat, this was neat, this was neat, but this is awesome. this is
actually really good.
It still feels so good. Every time I, you know, jump into one of those little star launchers and Mario just puts his arms out and flies through space and something explodes behind him and you're just gathering little star bits. It's such an amazingly well-built game. I'm just in love with it.
I am honestly excited to get to it, but I set a stupid goal for myself. Now I gotta fucking do it.
Bless you. I mean, I tell you, you'll probably appreciate it even more that way.
I mean, most likely.
If there's one way to make sure you like that game, it's to play the other ones first.
slog through a bunch of shit first and then get to it.
The only other thing I'll get to, I mean, I played some more of those Mario Advance 4 e-reader card levels, which are super weird and fun. And I'm like, I've been dedicating myself super hardcore to my Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles reread, which is great. But I didn't think I was going to get a chance to do this week because it's been at least a week. But just earlier today, I got to finally jump in back into Hyrule Warriors because I was at a level that I needed to dedicate like 45 minutes to. And I just hadn't had that time, but I did because I actually did Ring Fit earlier today. And it's like, well, I'm still sweating, so I'm not going to get into the shower. So I need to just kind of sit on my ass and cool down for a while. So I booted up Hyrule Warriors and I played one of the levels where in the beginning of the game, you're trying to go around and recruit the champions to pilot the Divine Beasts. And I did not expect that I was going to get to do that yet because I beat one of those levels where I got Urbosa and now I got Mipha. And then like before I could go back to the map and save and everything, it was like, all right, now there's a whole bunch of Lionels attacking this village. Hop in the Divine Beast and fuck some shit up. And it was amazing. So I'm in the big elephant thing and it's like, you got infinite ammo. There's no like ammunition. It's just, you are a giant fucking thing and you just aim everywhere and just laser the shit out of everything. It was That's the pretty coolest awesome. Shit. The whole time I'm just like giggling the whole time because like you shoot a whole bunch of guys and you just see all the little bodies flying up and down and freezing in place and stuff. It's like, this is hysterical. And then you can get the super move and it's like, you know, Ryu's giant crazy Hadouken from Marvel vs. Capcom 2. It's like that, but coming out of a beast the size of a castle. It's just like mowing down, like just completely mowing down troops and troops and troops. It's so freaking cool. This game's great, man. It's not great, but it's great. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm having fun with it. It's got technical issues here and there. The frame rate dips a whole bunch, but I am having so much fun with this stupid game. I'm really happy I bought it.
Well, that's good, man. Like, and it's one of those things too, right? Where it's like, I can forgive some technical issues. You know what I mean? I can overlook some things when the rest of the game is fun to play. The Hollow Knight map system, we've talked about it enough. It's garbage. Doesn't make that a bad game at all.
No, sir.
The game is just so fucking good. Like, I worry, my concern going into this next generation of gaming here is that people are going to get so focused on what they can do that some of them are going to forget to make games around it. You know, which is always
people that have been doing it for generations,
the hurdle. Yeah,
it's a lot of that's the way I feel about a lot of AAA games is that I think and this isn't necessarily a criticism. It's just about my sensibilities, because I do think that a lot of people enjoy that aspect of the games. Like, look at what this game can do. Look at this world. This is amazing. And that's a lot of fun for people to just exist in a game that can do these things. It's kind of like me playing. And I'll get to this later, but it's like me playing Resident Evil 2 on Nintendo 64. Just because I can.
just somehow they made this work.
You look at this and you say, that shouldn't exist. And yet it does. I have a Doom cartridge in my Game Boy Advance. This shouldn't work, but it does.
I almost bought, I saw it was on sale for a couple bucks. I didn't. But Doom 64 was on sale on the PlayStation store. And I was like, that's weird. I should probably... No, I'm not gonna. I'm gonna go back to playing
the show. I mean, we talked about it when it came out on Switch. I did. I bought it, and I still don't really like it all that much.
No, sure. I just thought the oddity of seeing Doom 64 on the PlayStation store was like,
weird. That's not weirder than seeing Kratos on the Switch. That's one piece of news that I think we just have to mention.
The dancing Kratos in Fortnite?
I haven't even seen him dancing, but the fact Kratos is in Fortnite and he's like, and it's on Switch. And apparently
everywhere.
The rumor is, hasn't been substantiated, that the next one is Master Chief, which will be in all the versions. And then fingers crossed, It's all about bounty hunters. Come on, man. Get Samus in Fortnite. I would be legit stoked about that. I'm not going to play it either. But I want to see that exist. I want to see a video game where Kratos, Master Chief, and Samus are all in the same game on all the platforms that it's available on. I just want to see that happen.
I do want to see that happen. The video that I saw of Kratos doing Fortnite dances is everything I hate about Fortnite.
It is the most sacrilegious thing. See, oh, that's the other thing. Like, seeing Kratos do it is one thing. Seeing Master Chief and Samus do it would be hilarious.
Yeah, yeah, because, like, it's just different, right?
It's just different. Because
it's just different.
Both of those series take themselves pretty seriously, but at the same time, it's like, you know, watching Stormtroopers do goofy shit, you know? It's like, sure, there's a degree where this is so silly innately, but like God of War takes itself very seriously.
It does.
So seeing Kratos do that shit is just kind of off-putting. And I haven't looked it up yet. I'm not gonna. I stopped at seeing pictures of people holding their Switches with Kratos on it and being like, well, that is just on a very base level. That is an awesome thing to see, and I want to see that across the board.
I do too. The exclusivity thing, you know my feelings on that. The fucking toxicity of the console wars is so stupid. It's just so dumb.
And I just like to see people playing
nice. We all love
this
thing, but I'm going to love my thing harder than you love your... Like, shut up. Fucking stop it. Grow up. It's so dumb. And it is such a childish thing.
Uh-huh.
It very much is this is my toys and my section of video gaming and fuck you. And it's weird because it's not like a sports team. You know, like on a sports team, like fuck the Astros. You know what I mean? Fuck the Red Sox. Fuck the Tampa Bay Rays. I hate all of those fans. And notice that I went to the fans first. I hate all their fans. I hate their fucking, not the Red Sox so much. Like, and how weird is that Yankees fans are like, Red Sox are kind of cool now, but the Astros and the Tampa Bay Rays, garbage cities, garbage people in them. It's just, because there's like a passion and a deep-rooted thing in there. But like video games, it's not, like, shut up. We're all on the same team.
Yeah, we should like be. Sports teams, the whole point is to compete against each other. It's like... game systems, like, really? You're going to be a PlayStation nut and get on somebody for playing the Switch? They're like not even in the same universe.
Like, it's Mario Sunshine, or whatever the fuck the last one was, Odyssey. Mario Odyssey is not competing with God of War Ragnarok.
It's just not.
They're just not. They're just not. If you're going to play, if you were going to play both of those games, playing one will not preclude you from playing the other one.
Exactly.
It's such a weird, odd thing. I just don't understand it, Chris.
Well, speaking of things I don't understand, we've got ourselves a giant AMA coming up.
I'm so happy that we actually got questions. I thought we were going to have to bullshit.
Yeah.
I was going to be like, oh, we have another question from a listener of what's your favorite type of socks? You're like, obviously wool. Next.
We're going to take ourselves a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to dive into these ridiculous questions. You're listening to the Stone Age Gamer podcast from Geekade.com. Stick around. Are you enjoying the podcast you're listening to right now? Of course you are. But did you know that it's just one part of an entire network of geek-related goodness? Geekade.com is your one-stop shop for fresh original content no matter what your geek is. Each week you'll find articles and podcasts about comic books, horror movies, X-Men, music, video games, music in video games, Transformers, anime, TV shows, tabletop gaming, wrestling, beer, and more. And hey, if you want to help us create even more original content, please consider supporting us on Patreon. That's available at patreon.com/geekade. What's your geek?
Hey folks, I'm Karen. You may know me as a writer for Geekade.com or as a co-host of the This Week's Episode podcast. But did you also know I make and sell all the handmade cross-stitch items available at Shoot the Moon Stitches? I have pieces for many different flavors of fandom, including Star Wars, Doctor Who, Supernatural, The Good Place, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and more. They make great decorations for your home or office and unique gifts for the geek who has everything. I also take commissions to make the perfect piece that suits your fandom and style. You can buy online or find me at your favorite local convention or offbeat art show. Visit Shoot the Moon Stitches on Etsy.com and follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at STM Stitches for the latest updates and to see examples of my work. That's Shoot the Moon Stitches for all your handmade, geeky, snarky cross-stitch needs.
Hello, nerds. This is Angie, your fellow podcaster, Geekade staff member, and artist. Do you need presents for this holiday season? Do you need presents because 2020 sucked? I get it. I hear you. I'm here for you. Treat yourself and your loved ones to something special and check out my Etsy store. As an artist with over 10 years experience, I have a little bit of something for everyone. I have wood-burned ornaments, nerdy prints, and original comic art and portraits. Want a commission? I do those too. Go to Etsy.com/shop/artofangela or check out my website for samples of my work, commission info, and contact information at angelafernot.com. Shop small, think big. Want a discount? Use promo code GEEK for 15% off your orders on my Etsy shop.
Hi, listeners. We have an exciting announcement. Mutant Musings is evolving.
For 2021, the Mutant Musings podcast is becoming the Mutant Musings Evolution podcast. But what the heck does that mean?
It means we're going to discuss all four seasons of the X-Men Evolution cartoon that aired from 2000 through 2003, all 52 episodes.
So on every episode of Mutant Musings Evolution, we'll discuss two or three episodes of X-Men Evolution. And we'll be releasing two episodes of Mutant Musings Evolution per month, every month of 2021.
Episode 1 of Mutant Musings Evolution will be out on Wednesday, January 6th, 2021.
Then get hyped for Mutant Musings Evolution!
Yay!
Hi everyone, Chris here. Outside of my work here at Geekade, I'm also a staff writer for Nintendo Force Magazine, a physical publication that aims to follow in the footsteps of the legendary Nintendo Power Magazine. Each issue is filled with reviews, previews, and a general sense of what's going on in the world of Nintendo, and they also come with full-color, double-sided posters. Right now, for a limited time, we're offering a special deal on our 2020 full-year bundle. This all-in-one purchase will get you physical copies of every issue we published in 2020, starting with issue number 44 and ending with issue 49. Revisit the weirdness of this year, which began with us looking forward to the Tokyo 2020 Olympics, which never happened, and ended with us drawing parallels between Hyrule Warriors' Age of Calamity and Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. You'll also get the celebrations of Animal Crossing New Horizons and Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition, as well as a double dose of Mario Magic with our Paper Mario the Origami King issue, which was immediately followed by our Super Mario Bros. 35th Anniversary Extravaganza. All posters and extras are included, so you'll get the Origami Peach Papercraft toy, the Vitamin Connection trading card from Limited Run Games, and six different double-sided wall posters for a total of 12 new images to consider using for your home decor. Don't miss this bundle deal, especially if you're new to Nintendo Force and wanting to get caught up on some of the back issues you missed. And if you like it, you can subscribe at any time for just $5 per issue. Nintendo Force Magazine, the force of Nintendo fans.
Geekade is looking for some partners. If you have something you'd like to advertise on any of our podcasts, our powerful overlords are ready to talk to you. Send your proposal to mail@geekade.com with the words podcast ads in the subject line, and our diligent army of trained ants will put you in touch with the head of our advertising department. With a weekly audience that reaches well into the dozens, Geekade is the perfect place to get your ads into the ears of the right people. Once again, that's mail@geekade.com. Send your ad in today.
We are back. We couldn't think of a good thing to do, and we've never really done, like, we always, like, solicit listener mail, but we never really did an AMA. So, good times.
Oh, so professional.
Nothing but. So here we are. I think the best way to start this, honestly, there is no, but we did this all on our Discord channel. because we didn't get any questions from anybody else. So,
bunch of bastards.
The only way to start this is the first three questions come from Scion Storm. Dan, who do you think you are? What gives you the right, and how dare you?
You're not wrong. You're not wrong, even a little bit. God, who do I think I am? Well, I like to think that I'm a good father, first of all.
Okay, all right.
I like to think so. You know, my wife tells me on my birthday and Christmas that I am, so that's 2 days a year. No, man. What was the second question? Who do I think I am?
What gives you the right?
Oh, what gives me the right is that I'm a white male. Oh. That gives me rights over everything, obviously. That's not even a question.
And finally, how dare you? And dare is in all caps, by the way.
Because I'm a white male. I agree.
my answers would be in this order. Yes, wooden and blue.
It makes perfect sense.
A car can be blue.
Off to such a good start.
Okay, hard right turn. Wind on Discord asks us, will FPGAs ever be a true substitution for classic hardware?
No.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I mean, look, FPGAs are super cool, and I'm thinking of, like, I don't have a ton of experience with FPGAs, but I have played some on my Mega SD. I've played some Sega CD games. That's right. Super cool. I can't tell the difference except the fact that I didn't open up a disk drive, put a disk in, and hear the disk drive doing its thing.
Yeah.
And that's part of the experience. It's not the only part of the experience. Obviously, like, once the game starts, I'm not paying any attention to that anymore. But it's the same reason I have a PlayStation 2 hooked up to my... a PlayStation 2 hooked up because it looks nicer. But when I want to play a PlayStation game, I'm not putting it in my PlayStation 2. I'm grabbing a PS1 out of my closet and hooking it up because that startup screen is part of the experience. And it's...
I certainly think there's part of that. I do think, cause it's a hard question to really answer because these are generational things that are so specifically defined by things like startup screens, that just give you, for us, cause we're older, that kick of nostalgia, mm-hmm. right? Like when I boot up Beautiful Joe, I want the little GameCube thing happening. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know it's on other consoles as well, but I played it on the GameCube, so that...
And when that loading screen is running, you want to hear the GameCube's, the sounds that that system makes when it's loading off the disc, you know? It's
right.
It's a subtle, small thing, but...
Now, but that's for us, right? Now, for my kids, when they're older, if they want to play retro games... they won't have that nostalgia factor attached to it. Mm-hmm. So absent the nostalgia factor, I think, yes, they will be replaced because you just, like, there really won't be another way to play it at a certain point.
Well, that's true. But the question was, will there ever be a true substitution for classic hardware? And I don't think that it could ever be a true substitution for it. I think it can be a valid substitution for it, but at the end of the day, there is nothing quite like the actual... If I go over there to use the Mega SD again, right? If I go over there to use the Mega SD and I want to play...
You're such a shill.
Sorry. If I want to go over there and I want to play Fantasy Zone, I turn on my Genesis and there I'm just... Because it plays Master System games, I'll play Fantasy Zone. But that is not the same experience of... grabbing the hard plastic case, opening it up, grabbing that ugly ass cartridge, jamming it into the top of the Master System, seeing the startup screen when you press that front button to turn it on, and playing with that original Master System controller instead of the super nice wireless Genesis controller I have.
Yeah.
It's not the same. It's arguably a better experience elsewhere.
Right.
But actually, you cannot... I wouldn't call it a true substitution for it, because there will always be a degree of physicality that cannot be replaced with an FPGA effectively emulating something, even if it is perfect emulation.
Even if it's can better. Never,
even if it's better. Even if it's superior it's emulation. It's still not exactly the same. So that would be my answer to that question.
Okay. You've convinced me. I'm easily swayed.
Okay, let's go to the game mechanic. This one was actually for me, but feel free to chime in as well.
Oh, I will.
I've been curious as to why you would choose to play something like Doom Eternal on the Switch versus the PS4. I love all my consoles, and I tend to play the game on the system that it plays best on and looks best on. How do you generally choose to go onto the Switch versus the PS4? Is it a portability thing? It is always interesting to hear about how others make their gaming choices. All things being equal, I tend to go exclusives, and the only console available is better than best gameplay graphics version is better than if equal. I tend to go with the Xbox as I like the controller best over PS4, over Switch, over PC. Just how I think about things when buying. Would love to hear what others think. I thought about this one quite a bit. It's really hard to quantify, but somebody, I was on some Facebook group earlier that mentioned that, like, they got a PS5 and they love the DualSense controller, but they don't love it as much as everyone else, because to that person, hands down, the Switch Pro controller is the most comfortable controller they've ever held. Mm-hmm. And my immediate thought was, I actually agree with that. I said earlier I was playing Tetris 99, and I could have gone through the process of getting up and grabbing that Super Nintendo controller and skipping the fact that I could choose where my garbage is being directed to because it doesn't have a right analog stick, or I could suck up playing with that shitty-ass D-pad and just be extra super special careful and hope that I don't screw up because of an incorrect input just so that I could play using that controller. And I think what it is just about the general ecosystem, the way that it works. Like, there is nothing wrong with a PlayStation 4 controller. I appreciate the PlayStation 4 controller. I appreciate the PlayStation 4's menus, the way it jumps in and out of games. But it's this weird comfort thing. I just like the way the Switch works. Now, Doom Eternal is kind of a different animal, but I'll say, like, let's make a broader comparison and say something like Hollow Knight that plays just the same on PS4 as it does on Switch, right?
Right.
Or even something else that's not mature rated. Let's say, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but say there was just some random game, like the Crash Bandicoot collection, right?
Sure.
Let's say I wanted to play the Crash Bandicoot collection. And would I buy it on Switch or would I buy it on PlayStation 4? PlayStation 4 is probably cheaper. It doubtlessly looks better. But I would be playing that game with a PS4 controller, and I would be playing it tethered to that one screen. With my Switch, I have a dock in my basement. I have a dock in my living room. And the system itself can be played in any room in my house. Now, obviously, I'm not going
anywhere. I have a dock in my mansion. I have a dock in the servants' quarters.
Dock in my pool shed.
I have a dock in my wife's house.
In my pool, as a matter of fact. no matter what situation is happening in my house, I can, like, for example, the Steelers were playing earlier today at a weird ass time on a Monday night. And
I believe you meant to say the Steelers were losing earlier today. Yes.
You meant to say that. I value my life.
I don't live with her. It's fine.
Correct. So the kids were like bouncing up and down on the couch after dinner because we ate in the living room because the Steelers were on. And so that's where we had dinner. And then afterwards, the kids are bouncing up and down. It's like, well, I need the kids to stay active somewhere, and John really wanted to play video games. So I said, all right, what do you want to play? He's like, I want to play Labo. Cool. So I grabbed the Switch, I brought it downstairs, and I plugged it into the dock downstairs, and then he was playing Labo, and she got to watch the Steelers game in peace. There's something about that freedom that makes me want to get anything I can on the Switch, because the availability to play it anywhere in the house is very important to me. Now, the thing about something like Doom Eternal, and I experienced this when playing Doom, was that I knew that game looked and played better on PlayStation 4. But right. It didn't, from everything that I understood, it didn't necessarily feel different. It just looked and ran different. And when I played it on the Switch, it felt great. I had so much fun with that game. And I didn't have any problems with any of the visual inconsistencies. And just because it looks better there doesn't mean it looks bad on Switch. That game looks incredible. Like, it is visually stunning. It's way more so on the PlayStation 4, but I'm not playing them side by side, so it's kind of like I don't know what I'm missing. So for something like Doom Eternal is the kind of game that I am going to want to play on a TV, but I'm also going to be playing it at night after the kids go to bed. So I could do it where I'm playing it downstairs in my living room, because that's where the PS4 is. But if I get it on Switch, I have the option to say, if Karen wants to watch something on television, then I can take it to another, you know, I can take it down to the basement and still play it on the TV. Or if I want to stay up late playing it, but I also don't want to stay up late downstairs, I can grab it and be like, I'm just going to go upstairs and plug in my headphones and play this in bed, or I'm going to play it on the toilet in the morning. Like, I have those options. And while I know it's not the optimal experience, and it's never going to be, I do trust in certain games that it will be a very enjoyable experience and still have the same soul. So I have full faith that Panic Button made a very playable version of Doom Eternal, just like they made a very playable version of Doom on Switch. And as long as that core still works, as long as that game still feels good to play, just like what I was saying with Hyrule Warriors, those hiccups don't bother me. They right. just don't, because it's not like I'm following some super dramatic story where if something looks silly during a cutscene, it's going to lose its emotional impact. It's fucking Doom. So I'm there to rip and tear, and as long as I can do that, then I'm good. Plus, Doom Eternal's got the gyro aiming, which is pretty fucking sweet.
See, now, for me, the answer to that question is, I don't know if it's more simple than your answer. Most of the time, I would prefer to play on the PlayStation, because I do the bulk of my gaming on my couch, and I find things to be cheaper and excellent versions of whatever game I am playing on the PlayStation. That said, there are certain games that I feel like I should play on a Nintendo console. I would have played much more of the Mega Man X-Zero collection if I had purchased it on the Switch. Now, I've played a fair amount of it on PlayStation, but Mega Man is a Nintendo game, to me. Castlevania is a Nintendo game, to me. You know, anything, if I'm going to get the Castlevania collection, I'm going to play that on a Nintendo console, because that's where I played them when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And there are just certain games that, to me, feel like they should be played on a Nintendo console, because that is where my memories of those games are.
It's the, you know, same thing goes for something like Final Fantasy VII or Metal Gear Solid. Like, playing Final Fantasy VII on the Switch is it tickles me.
Right.
But
I would never.
It's that game still feels like a PlayStation game.
Yeah.
And,
you know, there are certain games, I think, like, because what you said earlier, I think, was a really good example of this, like the Crash Bandicoot games. You can get them on any system now, but you should play them on Sony because it's Crash.
That's like, yeah,
you should play that on a Sony system. Like, it's just where that game feels right. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's some of them are easy to point out. Others are a little less easily quantified. But, you know, for me, it's really just more of a gut feeling. You know, if I'm deciding between two, you know, big budget AAA whatever games, the two systems I have right now are the Switch and the PS4. So if there is a big budget, like if I were going to buy Cyberpunk 2077, I would be getting that on the PlayStation and not the Switch. You know, portability and all that other stuff be damned. But if there was a new, you know, retro RPG style thing, like a traditional turn-based RPG, I mean, I'm probably going to get that on the Switch because that just is where that feels right for me.
Yeah, it's not a super quantifiable thing. I will also say specifically to Doom Eternal, like I mentioned before, I am very tickled by people's ability to make things run where they shouldn't.
Right.
So
it's why we both have played Doom on a pregnancy test. Because why not?
I haven't. I wish I did. But it is the reason that I bought Doom on Super Nintendo. It's the reason I bought Doom on Game Boy Advance. It's the reason I bought Resident Evil 2 on Nintendo 64. It's fascinating. When I played through Doom on the Switch, I was never not just savoring every second of, like, I can't believe that they did this. Like, really,
the crazy
really.
Bastards did it.
They actually, because, you know, if you play through Doom on the Switch and all you're seeing are the differences between it and PlayStation 4 or Xbox One, you're just missing the damn point. Like,
right.
Look at this. Look at the other thing. Look at what other people have done on the Switch. Look what has been pulled off. Even Hyrule Warriors. Look at what. Yeah. Look at where that game stumbles and falls. And look at something like Doom, and just marvel at the technical proficiency that it takes to get something like that running on something like that. That
it
will
is
never
impressive.
Not. That will never not fascinate me. That Doom is playable on a Super Nintendo. Not just like, well, that's awful. No, it's actually
it's
not. It's not great, but like it's very playable. I beat that damn game on the Super Nintendo, and like it just amazes me. Like, how did you do this? Why did you do this? Because
why?
You could.
Who and, are you? Who do you think you are? What gives you the right? And how dare you?
Very good question, Game Mechanic. I hope we
answered it
to the best of our abilities here. All right, let's move on to our good friend Mike Sheridan.
Love
Why do people think Symphony of the Night is the best Castlevania? Because it is.
Yeah, it is. No, why do people think Symphony of the Night is the best Castlevania? Is because it was the first game that really went out and broke that mold of, you know, what would eventually come to be called a Metroidvania. Mm-hmm. But it was so packed full of secrets and so gorgeously animated. And the story, like, even for all the bad acting, was cool, even in the context of a Castlevania story. The music is absolutely incredible. And a lot of times things that are the first get labeled as like, oh, this is the best. It was the first one. You know, when that is just not
Super
even
Mario
true.
64.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, oh, it's the best. Like, no, it's fucking not. It really isn't. But Symphony of the Night is one of those games that just still holds up.
It does. And it was also, you mentioned the visuals. It's worth pointing out that there was nothing like it at the time.
Nothing.
Everybody was using the PlayStation to explore 3D. And Konami was like, fuck it, we're going to use the power of the PlayStation to make the most gorgeous 2D game you've ever seen. So there was nothing like that. Nobody was doing 2D games of that caliber back then. And it's excruciatingly well polished. And it was just, it felt like everything, it felt like playing an alternate universe of like 3D never happened. So this is what the next evolution of games was.
Yeah.
And it was kind of amazing because it was so much more than what the Super Nintendo or Genesis could do. But it was also not pushing the boundaries of polygons and stuff like everything else on the market. But it really comes down to a matter of style, because I think that some people think Symphony of the Night is the best Castlevania, but there are plenty of other people who don't, because it is, that was the dividing line. Like, yeah, Simon's Quest and Vampire Killer for MSX, they both introduced those exploration qualities,
right.
But for the most part, Castlevania games up to that point were action games, just action platformers. Yeah. Symphony of the Night brought in the exploratory elements like Metroid, and it did it so well. It's just, it is an undeniably well-crafted game.
It is an impeccable game.
It is. Alucard is unbelievably cool. That the voice acting, I mean, seriously, at that point, voice acting in a game, in a 2D action game, voice acting was still a pretty unheard of thing. Especially, you're just playing the game, and then you walk in there, and Death goes, "Ah, Alucard, what is your business here? I've come to put an end to this." Like, that whole thing is just...
God, so cool!
It's ridiculously cool. So, yes, I think that is why people think Symphony of the Night is the best Castlevania, because it is an undeniably high-quality experience. But I don't think that all people think Symphony of the Night is the best Castlevania game, because...
What is the other one that people go... Is it Dawn of Souls or Aria of Souls?
I think people like Aria of Sorrow more, but I don't...
Aria of Sorrow.
I don't know. I'm out of the loop on that. There was a time when those are both so goddamn good, but like Ordo of Ecclesia is really good. Really, any of those Igavania ones are just really top-notch games. But then on the other side of it, the action games, people really love, Rondo of Blood or Castlevania III Dracula's Curse, or even the first Castlevania.
Yeah.
There's so much to like in so many Castlevania games, but, that's my answer.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's the things that I mentioned, but also I feel like the control in that one is the most perfect it's ever been.
Oh my God. It feels so good to play that game. It is
like, and the rest of them feel great, but that one is just a little bit more polished, I guess.
Well, I mean, that precise, you had full control over him in the air. You didn't have that in previous Castlevania games. There was always a degree of... There was... Not always. There was sometimes a degree of it in later stuff like Rondo of Blood, and particularly in Super Castlevania 4. But in Symphony of the Night, you just had full... Nah, turn on a dime in midair. Who cares?
Yeah, you're a vampire. Fuck it. It's just... Yeah, man. That game, it's just fabulous.
It just truly, fabulous. Truly is. Okay, let's head back up to Scion Storm. Let's see. Scion Storm asks, there's been some mentions of a band in recent episodes. I'd love to hear more about that. Also, how you guys met, how long you've known each other, and what games you've bonded over.
Oh, God. How long have we known each other? So, I was in college, which was quite a long time ago. It was 2001, I think. 2001 seems right.
God, I can't even find any information on that store. All right, so...
I'm trying to think. I remember because, like, nothing can be said because we are the age that we are. Nothing can be said about that year without, mentioning the terrorist attack on the Twin Towers.
Right, and that's when it was. It was that year.
It was that year because we sold... so many prints of the New York City skyline. I have one hanging in the Jose Canseco Executive Annex right now from Prince Plus when we worked together, the one that I had given to my grandfather.
See, now, I wasn't there yet. So Dan and I met at a store in the Hamilton Mall, a print shop, a framing store, custom framing called Prince Plus.
It's best now, job I ever had.
That job was crazy. I still have art from that job hanging up on my wall. I have
three pictures in this room right now are from that place. Yeah.
This was after I was working at Funko Land, and after GameStop bought him out, things just progressively got worse and worse and worse, where my dream job became a nightmare job. So I decided to quit, and I had a job interview on September 11th at Suncoast, Suncoast Movies. I got a job there where I was at for a couple of months, and just from working in the mall, I got to meet a handful of other people, including Sharon. Bright, mm-hmm. Sharon was her name, and
Sharon was the store manager.
Yeah. And she convinced me to come work for her at Prince Plus, which is where I met you.
And Sharon convinced me to come work at Prince Plus because in college, her boyfriend at the time, who is not the guy that she's married to now, I don't think. Not that it matters. Nobody's checking. But her boyfriend at the time lived in the same dorm that I lived in, and he would go outside and smoke cigarettes, and I would go outside and smoke cigarettes back when I was a smoker instead of a super cool vapor like I am now. And we would just go, we would just hang out like all night, you know, because that's what you do in college. You stay up all night smoking cigarettes and talking shit and whatever. And she eventually mentioned that they needed somebody to come work there. And she was like, I don't know, you look like you can lift boxes. I will hire you to be my heavy lifting bitch. And that was what my name tag said when I got there for my first day. It said Dan, heavy lifting bitch on it. And I was like, this job's fucking great. And then she broke her, like, then she hired you and then broke her ankle, I think, at the store and left.
Oh my God. Yeah. I forgot about that.
And then the assistant manager quit. So I became the acting manager after I was there for like a month and a half. And then we just ran that store. I think we single-handedly put that company out of business. Cause they are not
they
around
were still
anymore.
In business when we left though, I think, right? Because Dan and I both went over to Toys R Us.
Yeah, but I left before you did.
You did. I stuck around.
I gave you, I told our district manager, I was like, all right, you got to make Chris the manager because I'm moving back home for the summer. Chris will be here. But yeah, like that shit, just working in the Hamilton Mall in Mays Landing, New Jersey. Is that where, it's Mays Landing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Mays Landing adjacent. Anyway.
No, it's in Mays Landing, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that was in 2001, so that was 19 years ago. And then, yeah, I know, from then, like, and it was, it just kind of became this thing of being there and just, you know, you work with somebody and you get to talking about shit, and it was like, oh, so we're, like, basically the same person. All right, that's pretty cool. You know, like, well,
and then we just musically, it was you asked about the band thing, and I was I had been in a couple of bands over time, and playing music with Dan is one of those things that just kind of clicked. Like,
yeah, it just kind of worked.
I've played music with other people before where you really have to work at it, but there was just a connection with me and Dan. Like, he starts playing guitar and it just worked. He'd play guitar, I'd sing, or I'd play drums, or it would just work. And even when, you know, distance became an issue, like, I wound up moving to New York for a couple of years, and it would still just work, like, over the phone or sending each other demos and shit, or whenever we would see each other, we would just we'd be able to get together and just play music, and it just absolutely clicked. And hey, it's pretty fun. He sent me a couple of demos, and I'm still working on trying to find time to add some drums to them, but I still love that music that we came up with. I just love it.
I do too. And it's so, because, you know, like I was saying to you and whoever that girl is that's on our show last week, Angie, I think that's her name. I don't know. I don't pay much attention. No, like, because I'd always been in like punk and hardcore bands. Like, I have a flyer somewhere around here, but I do have a picture of it on the internet. I'll see if I can find it to put in the show notes for anyone who cares. But I was in a band when I was in high school called RCI, Rectal Cranial Inversion, because we thought we were cool. And also because it's a George Carlin bit. But like, it was, you know, it was like a post-hardcore, like, punk kind of thing. And like, I have this flyer from playing a show in Woodbury, New Jersey at a bar, some shitty little bar called Hot Shots, which I'm sure they're lovely people that own it and whatnot, but it's a shitty dive bar. And the show that we played, we ended up opening up. We just got added to the show through people that we knew, and we ended up opening up for Killswitch Engage before they like blew up and were a huge, huge band, like touring all over the world. So like, that was pretty cool, but that was the style of music that I played. And then, you know, after meeting you and mellowing out a little bit as I got into my early 20s,
My wuss rock music.
Your wuss rock, and you were like, "Have you heard Guster?" And I was like, "Fuck them!" But you know, like, what is this Wilco bullshit?
Yeah, I was in a band for years called One Pedaled Bike, and it was very much modeled after bands like Dispatch and Guster, where it's except way wussier.
Yeah, it's like, so much wussier.
It's just no two bones about it. And it's that's other music that I still absolutely adore. It's part of any time I get excited on September 23rd every year. So when we recorded our first album, but and I still have framed on my wall when we recorded music. We went to a studio and did the whole thing, and we got a one check from MP3.com. from a royalty check from people buying our music, and it was a check for 2 cents. A check quite literally not worth the paper it's printed on. And I never cashed it, I just framed it.
that's spectacular. I think what always worked about the music that you and I would play, because it always did come together so effortlessly, was that it was kind of that marriage of like the wuss rock and the punk rock kind of forming this like weird middle-aged rock thing that sort of just really worked. And you know, unfortunately, as it often does, you know, like life gets in the way, and I had graduated school and gone back to get my master's, and I had to leave the area to get a job in my field. So I had moved away, and then I was gone for 8-9 years, something like that, you know,
and that
just kind of put the kibosh on that. But
doing stuff with other bands.
You were doing your shit. And then over this quarantine time, I've had this idea, and I've had the idea like kicking around for a while now, but really started writing more when, you know, during this time where we've been home. I'd always been, except when I played with you, like every other musical project I ever really got involved with, I was very controlling and very particular about shit, because I'm not a very good guitar player, but I am a good songwriter. And like those two things are very, very different. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I can't read music. I can't tell you what chords I'm playing half the time, but I know what I'm doing. And I know how to put a song together. And I was always very, very particular about that sort of thing. And kind of difficult to work with in that sense. So the songs that I've been writing now, the idea has been of, I'm going to record a guitar track. And then once I record it, I'm going to send it to somebody else. And then whatever happens to it from that point forward is what happens to it. Like, it is a complete and utter lack of ego in the music that is being created, just to see what happens when creative people work together on something without the potential for ego to get in the way and fuck it up, right? And I think that's a really interesting idea, and I have to get back on recording shit. But I'm really hoping that I get a new guitar at some point, because this guitar that I have is so beat to shit. It's not what an acoustic guitar... It looks how an acoustic guitar should look. It does not sound or play like a guitar should do either of those things.
Yeah, I think another piece of it that really worked as far as the two of us together was that you are very particular about what you're playing and how you're playing it, but I'm also very anal retentive when it comes to music. And so I was able... When you played something on guitar, I was able to match it. And as far as like the inflection of the way you would strum something, because I picked up on that rhythm, and because I was able to match it, I was able to, you were able to then trust me to play it the way you wanted it played so that you could continue doing your thing. And it just really worked. And it's always been one of those really unique things. One of the most unique experiences I've ever had, musically, just to be able to, the way that we played off of each other. But
yeah, it just not work at all. Yeah. Like not even work even a little bit.
It was just fun.
It was.
As far as what games we've bonded over, I mean, there's really only one game that comes to mind when I think of actual bonding over games.
Yeah.
And that would be Rygar.
Yeah. 100%. Which was a game that you had beaten for me because I had been going through it with a girl, because at that point, you know, it was, oh, this is the last girl that I'm ever going to be with. And, you know, she had destroyed my confidence and all of that. Like, I was way worse before her. It's like, I still haven't gotten it all the way back yet, but you know, like I was a fucking asshole. But you know, I was going through it and I was just fucking sad, man. Like, just proper, for real, honest to God, sad about where I was in life at that point. And I came over to the Hall of Justice and I was like, fucking beat Rygar for me. I've never seen the end of it. And it's just really sad. And I think that I'll be getting my mind off it if we could just play through the game. And you fucking were like, I got you. And just sat down.
It's like, oh, twist my arm, beat an old NES game front to back, sure, why not, let's do it.
in fucking one sitting, just hours, man, just sitting there. And I don't think we even like really talked the whole time you were playing. Yeah. It like I just sat there and watched, man, and it was one of the most relaxing and needed and heartfelt and caring things that anybody has ever done for me. Like, that was what I needed in my moment of grief and sorrow, was to watch this fucking game that I could never figure out when I was a kid. Just always so mad at that game. It's like, Chris is good at video games. He'll beat it for me.
I was, yeah, I loved that night. I did.
It was great.
You know, we played Streets of Rage 4 together earlier this year. That was a lot of fun. And, you know, I remember
we played a ton of Soul Calibur,
Mortal Kombat and stuff together over at your dorm room. But yeah, Rygar was like, that was the game we really really bonded over, I'd say.
Yeah, that and Darkened Sky. It's a game about Skittles. It's your birthday? All right, you're fucking having that. Let's go to the store.
No, really, it's about Skittles.
It's all right.
Fascinated
you're getting
by
it.
That game. Absolutely fascinated by that game.
The thing that I've always found interesting, too, because where you worked, see, I grew up in Williamstown, New Jersey. I'm not going to tell any of you creeps where I live now, but I grew up in Williamstown, New Jersey. And the video game store that was closest to my house was the Funko Land in Turnersville. It was like 10 minutes away from my house in New Jersey. You worked at that store at the time that I was buying video games. So it is 100% that I had purchased things from you in that store.
And like just that, never pieced it together.
That definitely happened at some point. And then, you know, years later, we would, you know, come back to it's just this weird thing, man. I
have another weird story that's really similar to that. Again, revolving around Funko Land. I, at my previous job, the one with the government, my boss, this woman named Lisa, who I'm friends with now, she had remembered me for some reason, but could never piece it together. And then at some point in conversation after working there for like a year, I mentioned that I ran the Funko Land in Mace Landing. And she was like, wait a second, you what? I was like, yeah, I used to manage that store. And she was like, oh my God, that's where I know you from. I met you once. I technically worked for you. So here's the thing. There was a point in time where I was multi-store managing. I was going back and forth between all these different locations. And I was technically in charge of Maze Landing, but I was never there. I stopped by once. And it was on her first day. She was in the back room. And she was like, I just took this interview. Is this a good job? And I was like, you know what? This job can be really good, but it can also be incredibly frustrating. Like, this was after the GameStop buyout. So it was like,
right.
I was kind of jaded and kind of on my way out at this point. But like,
answering honestly.
I was answering honestly. And it was this weird in the middle of nowhere memory. I didn't even remember I had. And once she mentioned it, I was like, oh my God, you were that girl that I met in the back room that one time. Freaking ridiculous. I was her boss for like 15 minutes and then she was my boss for like 5 years. She was hilarious.
That's so weird. I'd hate to tell you what I did in that back room of that store. Anyway.
I'm sure there are all manner of good stories of weird things that happened in that back room.
Terrible.
All right, so let's see. Next question. Let's travel back to Wind. Will emulation ever enhance games to the point they outweigh the inaccuracies? I think that was kind of the second part of the question we asked. We answered already. So, never mind. I'm going to ask his other question. Wind, I'm not sure if this was part of the AMA or just something that came up on Discord, but I thought it was a good question, so I'm asking it anyway. What is the best working/studying game soundtrack?
Oh, man. That's a really good question. Shit, because I did that a lot when I was getting my my psychology degree. Most of the time, when I would come and sit down and write, you know, like do my papers and my research and stuff, I would put on Chill Hop on YouTube. But then there would be these weird, like jazzy hip hop versions of Zelda songs that would pop on every now and again, and these weird jazzy versions of not Nintendo, of Animal Crossing tunes that would pop on that were really, really good. So I would definitely suggest those. And Skies of Arcadia soundtrack, I think, is really good for that. It's a little, I don't know, that's actually a little too, like, there's some battle music. Maybe it's not the best thing for studying. Man, you talk. I'll see what else I can come up with.
Well, I mean, best working,
because this is
really
way more your area than mine.
It depends so much on what you're doing, you know, what kind of work you're doing. I used to love listening to podcasts when I was working at GameStop. Or just weird shit that I found on OC Remix. But I do find that if I'm doing menial tasks or some sort of studying or working that involves writing, I really like listening to the Super NES Lemmings soundtrack. Mm. I just find that one to be calming, just the right mix between calming and exciting. Like, it's not going to put me to sleep per se, but it's also
right.
Not going to be so intrusive that it takes my mind over. The same thing goes with the just about any of Soyo Oka's Super NES stuff, particularly Pilot Wings and SimCity. Those are two really good, I find, to be very good studying soundtracks, or not that I do much studying, I've really been much of a studier, but that kind of, you know, writing and working, that kind of stuff where I need to concentrate on something, that those are really great soundtracks for that. But if I'm trying to, you know, work and like if I was I was doing an overnight or something at GameStop trying to reorganize the Xbox 360 section, I would blast shit like Sonic Rush, you know, just anything to really kind of get myself moving.
Vampire Killer.
The Street Fighter II soundtrack, like they're just running through that whole thing top to bottom, like so much good music there. But most of the time I just have this mix that's a couple thousand songs of just random ass video game music. There's any game song that I've ever liked just kind of mixed together, and I just throw that on is usually what winds up playing in the background whenever I'm writing or doing some sort of work. That's kind of my answer. So not really a specific, this is the soundtrack to go to, but just kind of my a gigantic playlist of all of my favorite stuff.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, it really does depend. Like, I know for me, like, when I'm studying and researching and working and doing all that smart shit that I do, I'd like to have something that is familiar enough but not distracting, like you said, like with the Lemmings soundtrack. I do go to the Hollow Knight soundtrack quite a bit because it is very haunting and very beautiful, but it also kind of fades away into the background as you're working on stuff. But like if I'm out running, which is not a thing that I do, but like mowing the lawn and whatnot. See, 'cause that's the thing. Like, I really don't listen to a ton of video game music. You know, for me, like, it is always much more like I the band that I'm focused on right now is I sent you that video in our Facebook chat the other day, but Days and Days, which is this really, I think they're really incredible DIY. They call themselves Thrashgrass, which is like, it's like a punk rock bluegrass, punk folk kind of thing out of Houston. And they're all super dirty and I love them. And that sort of thing. But like, I really don't listen to video game music all that much. It's usually instrumental Asian inspired hip hop or Days and Days, like, punk folk music, which is weird.
You mentioned running. And so I just like, all right, well,
that is a thing you used to do.
I used to do it before my knee decided that I shouldn't do that anymore. so I've got three different, playlists here of running music. And like, I'm looking at this one, it's got, the opening stage from, Mega Man X, you know, the highway stage, a couple of tracks from Sonic Rush, the Space Harrier theme, traps from Turrican 2, like that kind of stuff. Or, what is this other one? I've got Blackout City, featuring Anna Monoguchi from Bit Trip Runner, Racing from Hang On, the arcade game, some OC Remix stuff, like this awesome, Katamari Damacy Love Everlasting OC Remix. There's a lot of really cool stuff for all these different occasions. Then I've got another playlist that's just dedicated to sleep. I've got four different sleep playlists, and they have a bunch of stuff from OC Remix on there. Some Lemmings, Marble Madness, a couple of Mega Man tunes, some Lemmings stuff, the theme from Ika-chan, the VVVVVV, the controls music, control selection from Star Fox. Like, it just kind of really depends on what it is that I'm doing. And I've kind of put together a bunch of playlists based on the way songs make me feel, but I don't have them usually like, this is this one soundtrack I'll put on top to bottom, especially because a lot of soundtracks don't have one specific feeling throughout the lot of them.
Right.
They tell a story. There's different kinds of scenarios. So something like Pilot Wings or Sim City, those are pretty stagnant as far as like, this is the kind of music you're going to hear when you're playing this game. But if you put on like a Zelda soundtrack or like a Final Fantasy soundtrack, throw on the Final Fantasy soundtrack, you're all over the damn map. Like,
really,
there's
are.
Some really, really beautiful quiet pieces, and then all of a sudden, like, I'm no longer concentrating on what I'm doing, you know? So, yeah, just depending on the situation. All right. Next question. The game mechanic asks, have either of you kept purchases from significant others in the past? What was it, and did you eventually come clean?
Oh my God, all the time. All the time. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I'm going to speak for men now, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but we think that we get away with shit all the time, and we really don't. We're really nowhere near as clever as we think we are. Kept from intentionally is maybe not the right, because like the shit I buy that I don't ever talk to anybody about is like baseball cards and like silly little shit.
Yeah, you know, I've made some kinds of stupid purchases before.
Yeah, like a $10 downloadable game or whatever. Like, I've never gone and been like, oh, I bought a PlayStation that I just keep in my fucking office now. You know what I mean? Like, I've never purchased anything crazy. I mean, that's just really not me either, you know? Like, I don't have a conversation about every little like $20 action figure that I buy.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
shit.
I don't have that kind of relationship
more
with my wife either. Yeah,
that's certainly like, I buy a bunch of baseball cards off of eBay, and then I don't say anything about it, and then my wife goes to get the mail, and she's like, "What the fuck, really? Did you grow up?" Like, no, but I needed this.
Well, see, we have a kind of a similar thing. I don't buy stuff that often like that, but she gets packages all the time. She's always ordering stuff for her stitching and whatnot. So she never judges me for the occasional shit that I buy or the occasional games that I buy or when I go to the comic book store. But it's like, she just trusts me to not make any stupid purchases. Where if I'm going to make some sort of big stupid purchase, I'm going to run it by her first. But
yeah,
there was one time where I was at Digital Press in Clifton back when we lived up in Elmwood Park, and I walked in and they had complete in box Link Faces of Evil and Zelda Wand of Gamelon. And they were, I can't remember what they were. There was something like, they were less than $100 a piece.
Which is still way too much.
It is, but...
But...
I mean, I had never seen
them. But understandable.
I had never seen them in person since they had come out, and I saw them in, like, a store as brand new things.
Right.
That I had no way to buy, because I was a little kid, and I didn't have a CDI.
You saw them at the service merchandise in town, or the Caldor.
I actually saw them in the Electronics Boutique, I believe. But... Ooh. So here they are, and I was like, this is, I can't, fuck it. So I put them on my credit card, and then I told her that I found them at a yard sale for stupid cheap.
And see, that's the thing. She 100% knew.
And didn't fucking care. Like,
no.
I mean, like years, I know I told her at some point, I don't even remember, and she was like, yeah, whatever.
See, like, I think that's one of the things that you and I have either strategically, if we want to give ourselves credit, or just happened to luck into, of having relationships, and we're both married to people that we genuinely like, in addition to being in love with, because, like, they are, as sappy as this sounds, like, I did legitimately marry my best friend. You know, there's nobody that I would rather be with or hang out with or experience things with than Tiff. You know, and because of the nature of our relationship, like the purchasing and hiding things that, you know, is a sitcom trope, certainly, but is definitely something that happens in a lot of relationships, is just not an issue. You know?
Yeah, because at the end of the day, like, she knows how much those things mean to me. That's why it doesn't matter. It's like this Zelda statue that's next to me, that stupid, I mean, not stupid, it's gorgeous. I love it with all of my heart.
Beautiful.
That Link on Epona first four-figure statue that cost $500 when it came out.
Yeah.
I was just like, I need to have this. And she was like, will it make you happy? And I said, yes, I think it will. Like, this legitimately will. And she said, do what you got to do. And I paid it off with the store that I was working at, that we were able to get it through, and I own it. And there it is right next to me at my desk. And it makes me happy every single day. And she knows this, and that was worth every penny of it. It's like we had hit some really, really hard times several years ago. And I was like, it's time for me to start bundling off and selling off my games soon. And she was like, don't do it. Do not do it. We're not there yet. I mean, if it gets absolutely to the, like, if it's this or we lose our house, then you can start considering that shit. But I know how much that stuff means to you. And if you sell it, it's going to break you.
Yeah.
And she's 100% right. Like,
oh, 100%.
I sit in that closet. I've more than once since in the last couple of weeks since I got all this shit together, I go into that closet over there and I will sit on the floor and just stare at the walls and just be as happy as a kid in a candy store.
Yeah.
And that's how, and she understands that this stuff means that much to me, and she wouldn't let me let go of it. And so, yeah, I did keep that from her, and obviously I'll buy things from time to time and not tell her, but she buys shit all the time and doesn't tell me because we don't have to. There's no point. We trust each other not to break the bank on stupid purchases, and every now and then, like, we'll make a stupid purchase, but...
Yeah. But we do that shit together.
We do that shit as a team. Excellent question, Game Mechanic. All right.
It is. It is a very, very good question.
Mike Sheridan. Who is the best Belmont?
Oh, that's good. That's a good question. I mean, I just kind of want to default to Simon.
I want to default to Simon too, but I have a...
I don't know that's the right answer.
There's just something really weird about the whole, like, where the Castlevania aesthetic went from Simon, where he's like this, got this Conan the Barbarian type look going on with him. Where
he yeah, I'm really super into that.
Match
though.
A lot of the modern stuff.
I like.
I love that. I love that look too. I especially like the modernized version they made for Smash Brothers is just brilliant.
It looks great.
But I love Richter's design. I absolutely love Richter Belmont's design. I mean, blue's my favorite color,
sure.
But it's also just, I don't know, I think Richter's a really cool design. He's so awesome. But at the similar token, like, what's his name? Joost Belmont?
Yeah, Joost.
He's got a really cool look, too. And he had that whole dash thing. Like, the whole game, you're mashing the L and R buttons to just dash everywhere.
Yeah,
and that was super cool. Freaking cool. I think for me, best Belmont, I got to go with Richter, because Richter was the first one to figure out, like, yeah, I could toss the holy water, or I could slam that shit on the ground and make a wave. Dude made
Power
the whole
wave.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I got to go with Richter, with Simon as a very close second.
Yeah, I got to go with Simon. I do. It's the Conan aesthetic really does it for me. Fucking loved that movie when I was a kid, and I was like, oh, it's like the same thing. That's awesome. I'm into it. I don't know. Yeah, Simon.
Let's see. Let's go to Duroc Pig. If I had to ask you and Dan anything, it'd be, if you were stranded on a deserted island, assuming there was power, what one game system would you want to have there with you? And if you could only have one game on the island, what game would that be?
Oh, shit. Oh, man. Game system?
If we're going with only one game system and I, like, get to have that game system's library with me, I'm probably going... I'm probably going Switch, because you've also got, you know, I've got the Genesis collection on it, even though it's got shitty problems. I've got the Castlevanias, the Mega Mans, the Contras, and then I've got the NES and Super NES, you know, online things.
Yeah. Are we on this island together? So, like, piggyback off of yours? Like, all right, you take the Switch. Because I think mine, and for anybody who listens to this show, I imagine that this would be a relatively surprising answer. But I think mine would be the DS.
That's a solid choice.
Because
see, I go 3DS though. You got to go 3DS because it's 3DS, compatible with all the DS, and then you have all the 3DS stuff.
And but my thought is that I want the Game Boy Advance library.
Oh, then yeah, DS would be
so
where
DS
you go.
DS is where I got to go. Mm-hmm. Because I want the Game Boy Advance library.
Yeah.
Because that gives me the Castlevanias. It gives me Mega Man games. It gives me some Super Nintendo games. You know, it gives me Zero Mission. It gives me, like, it gives me Advance Wars. It gives me Golden Sun. I mean, I really don't even want it for the DS games. I mostly just want a better Game Boy Advance. And I enjoyed playing on the DS.
Solid choice. All right, yeah. So let's go
with
the second part.
I think
part
that
of
would
it.
Be my choice.
Second part of it, if you could only have one game on the island, what would that game be?
Fuck. I mean, that I don't even know. I mean,
I'm going with Tetris DS.
Yeah, like the original Tetris. Like just or some version of Tetris, I think, would be the one.
Yeah, Tetris DS is the one for me, because that's, as far as I'm concerned, the most fun way to play it, and it's got so many different modes, too, if you ever get bored with the one.
Yeah.
And since Tetris is effectively bottomless, it's...
Right, right.
The Tetris is never not fun. So, yeah, if I had to just have one game for the rest of forever, it would be Tetris DS, because then it would also remind me of other games. Like, well, I could still listen to Metroid music and Super Mario music and stuff. Because it's all Nintendo game themed. So.
Yeah, I think it would have to be some flavor of Tetris, man. Like, because I want to say Puzzle and Dragons, but then they'll stop, like, service for the game, and then I'll be shit out of luck.
Yeah.
Do I get to pick another game when they're done with that?
There you go. I like that.
Because, I mean, it would honestly be between Tetris and the show. as much as I am not like the biggest sports gamer in the world, that game is also relatively bottomless.
Yeah, because baseball will always be fun. So
baseball is always fun. The management aspects, there's always new challenges you could come up with for yourself.
No two games are going to play out exactly the same. It's
that's got
the same kind of feel. Yeah,
there's all the little chaos theory that goes into a game of baseball, and then multiply that by 162 game season, all the different stuff with the road to the show modes of like, I'm going to become a Hall of Famer at every position. You know, like there is, by the time I would die of old age on a fucking island, there's enough content there to get me there. I think so.
All right.
We're trying to be pragmatic about it as well. Not going to live forever on this island, so.
We've got a follow-up question from Wind on Discord. What video game system makes the greatest fire kindling, or is best for splitting coconuts?
Ooh. Splitting coconuts? Well, because one of the Xboxes probably has to be the best for splitting coconuts. It's the heaviest.
That's my first thought, was thinking, because I remember working at Toys R Us when the Xbox came out, and like they had to redo the boxes because the systems would fall out of the bottom. You would pick up the box from the sides, and the system would just rip right through the bottom of the cardboard. Like, how'd you not figure that one out at first, huh? Yeah.
That thing was a goddamn monster.
I think it was a monster, but I'd probably say the CDI. I think it's heavier and it's got more sharp corners. So that would be my for splitting coconuts. As far as fire kindling,
I don't know, an afterburner cabinet, like a sit-in afterburner cabinet. I think you get some coconuts open with that son of a bitch.
Give me the 8-player Fast and Furious game with the motorcycles.
Oh man, as far as fire kindling, like, I mean, it's got to be the Jaguar, right? That's got to be the worst system.
Well, I mean, I'm thinking of flammability, but it's not like those wood grain systems had actual wood in them.
Yeah,
so.
No.
I mean, but still, fire kindling with the most small parts I could break off. I almost feel like the 2600, you could rip off all those individual like lines and use them as small bits of kindling. Not that it burns all that well, but if I had to burn a game system, I'd burn the CDI. But that's more out of spite than anything.
Probably burn the Amico just to piss off Tommy.
How dare you?
I know. It has to be like a CDI or a Jaguar or something that just came out that has just so few redeeming qualities about it.
You know what? It's the original recipe PlayStation 3. Not necessarily kindling, but that thing generates so much heat.
Yeah, you put that together with the old TV I had, and it was fucking toasty warm no matter what temperature it was outside.
You get that thing running hot enough and then put a bunch of sticks around it, I think you could start a fire. Yeah,
I think you could.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the original PlayStation 3. Okay, let's see. What do we have left? All right. Let's go with... We got a couple of small ones left here. Let's see.
This is not very personal. Disappointed.
Well, we went through the whole, like, how we met and all that
stuff.
Yeah,
well, I suppose that was personal.
Any games that you have a total disagreement on, fight to the death kind of opinion that the other disagrees with?
Man, I don't think so.
Well, I mean, Mega Man 2 and 3... I'm Mega Man 3, you're Mega Man 2, but we both respect each other's opinions there.
Sure, like, I don't think you're a fucking idiot. You know, like, I mean, I think you're a fucking idiot, but not for that reason.
No, I don't think there was... I mean, yeah, even with something like Breath of the Wild, it was my game of the year, and you didn't particularly care for it. Like, I understand
but I get
your
it.
Criticism. Yeah, I get it.
I get it.
Yeah,
I don't like Ocarina and Majora's Mask, but...
I get Majora's Mask.
You know, like, I totally understand, like, what people understand. It's not like I'm a huge GTA guy and you're, like, just very anti-GTA. I really don't think there's... because neither of us are Elder Scrolls kids or Oblivion or Red Dead.
Yeah, I think it's just our general disposition is that, you know, we both stand pretty true on the whole, like, there is no sense in hating something, or no matter how much you disagree, like, about video games, it's not hard to appreciate why people appreciate the games that they like.
Sure. Yeah.
It's just, there's not one of those things where I look at it and say, I do not understand how you can possibly enjoy Grand Theft Auto 4. Like, I don't right. at all, even a tiny bit.
Right.
But I
not
can
my
understand
thing.
Why people do. So, yeah, yeah, no, I mean, I don't think there's anything like that.
I will be forever furious at you for not downloading Puzzle and Dragons, but apart from that, that's just you being a dick on purpose, which is fine.
I'm saving that for when we really need a good episode idea.
So finally, Chris finally breaks down.
It's like, well, we need something to talk about next week. All right, fine. This is the week. I'll download Puzzle and Dragons and I'll play it for a week and see what happens.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's one of those things, like, and we've always been that way too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've always, not just with each other, but like with everybody, of like, hey man, that's not my thing, but like, God bless you, live the dream.
I mean, it comes from being good at our jobs at game stores. Like,
yeah, yeah,
you want to come in and buy Barbie's Horse Adventure, like, does that make you happy? Then live the dream. Who the hell cares?
Then do it,
like,
man. Who cares what I say about it? I'm some fucking asshole. My opinion doesn't count for much.
All right, Mike Sheridan, do you think wall meat has flavor or is it bland?
God, I would have to imagine it's salty.
Yeah, it's got to be salty. That is, I am certain it does not have a good flavor, but there's no way that shit is tasteless.
Yeah. It is not bland by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah, salty, a bit rancid, gamey. The nice way of saying, I don't like this. It's a bit gamey. It's a bit clangy and a bit jammy. Yeah.
Okay, let's see. What do we got left? I'm jumping all around here. Okay, I've been saving these ones. We've got Fuck, Marry, Kill, NES, PlayStation 1, and Dreamcast.
Fuck, Marry, Kill, NES, PlayStation 1, Dreamcast. PlayStation, NES, Dreamcast.
Dude, fuck PlayStation.
Yes.
You'd marry an NES, you'd kill the Dreamcast.
Have fucked a PlayStation, Chris. No will. No will or would.
Regularly.
Let's get personal now.
Let's see. Dreamcast? No. PlayStation 1, NES, Dreamcast.
Yeah, that's the way it has to be.
That's the way, yeah, I mean, I love the Dreamcast, but
sure.
Sorry, you got nothing on NES and PlayStation 1.
Yeah, it's just, it's not even close.
PlayStation 1 is outstanding, but, you know, NES is NES. That's my childhood right there. So I'll spend the rest of my life with an NES over a PlayStation 1 any day of the week, but I will happily have a really good time with PlayStation 1. So,
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, I will. Right. I will take that PlayStation out to a bar and make some bad decisions.
All right, follow-up, Scion Storm, Fuck, Marry, Kill, Jaguar controller, N64 controller, CDI controller.
Yes. Oh, man. I'm going to marry the N64 controller.
Definitely.
Because I just had a lot of fun with that controller. Mostly playing wrestling games.
And
but
you
whatever.
Know what? It's got a really good D-pad. For as bizarre as it looks, it does work.
It does work. It's not the most uncomfortable controller in the world.
The CDI controller, without a doubt. That just straight up fucking murder that thing.
Yeah.
I don't care what variety you're talking about.
No.
I've never played the actual one with the D-pad, but I'm just going to assume it sucks. But no, those other ones, they can just die in a fire.
Yeah, would rather play Kaiju Mario with a chainsaw controller than ever use a fucking CDI controller.
And as far as the Jaguar controller is concerned, like, yeah, sure, let's have some fun. Let's go with it.
Yeah,
it'll be weird, but, you know, like, why not?
A begrudging fuck. I mean, like, all right, it's fine. I'm here. You're here.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
Okay. Scanning, seeing if I'm missing anything. Okay, this one's from Tiny Matt. This will be directed at Dan.
Ooh.
What are your favorite and least favorite types of beer? Also, is there a particular beer that is your very favorite?
Oh, man. So my very favorite beer, without question, is Bourbon County Stout from Goose Island. It is... So when I started getting into craft beer, because I'd always had a very tenuous relationship with alcohol. Now we're getting personal, right? Because my grandfather and my father were both alcoholics. And my grandfather was an alcoholic. He was like such... This is how amazing this dude was. I don't know if this is amazing, but I always found it amazing. He was an alcoholic to the point where he went to Alcoholics Anonymous and did that program so well that he was able to then return to drinking scotch and never became an alcoholic again. I still have, he passed away almost 10 years ago now, I still have his very last bottle of scotch up in my liquor cabinet. So yeah, like, because that's not how that's supposed to go, right? You're an alcoholic, you go through the program, you never touch alcohol again. He was able to return to casual drinking, which is an insane amount of willpower and intestinal fortitude, I suppose. And then my father was a not only an alcoholic, but a manic depressive alcoholic, who was also suicidal on top of it, which is how he died when I was very young. So I had a very tenuous relationship with alcohol to where I never really indulged in a point of like, we're getting fucking hammered, blah, like I'm going to drink 50 beer, because I was always fucking terrified that I would also become an alcoholic. So I drank throughout college, but never hard liquor, usually only beer. And I, you know, beer is not that great as far as like Budweiser, Keystone Light, which is what we drank at college, is not good beer per se. So like as I started exploring craft beer, it was like, oh, this just actually really tastes good. Like there is an art form to what these guys and girls are doing here with the beer that they're brewing. This is really, really cool. So when I drink, sometimes I forget to eat during the day and it sneaks up. I'm like, oh, that was a 12% beer. I should have had a sandwich or something, because now I'm just going to be like silly and a little drunk. But for the most part, the beer that I drink is like one at a time and just for the flavor of it. The way you, Chris, enjoy Juicy Juice is the way that I enjoy an IPA, or the beer that I had tonight was a black and white milkshake stout. Like it's chocolate and vanilla and the whole thing. Right, just a tasty beverage and nothing more than that. So exploring the world of craft beer, the first one that I found that was like, ooh, this is a limited thing and it's hard to get and you have to show up at a store at a special time to get it, was Bourbon County Stout, which is just an imperial stout that is aged in bourbon barrels. And from the first sip that I had, I was just like, this is like a chef crafted this meal, is how incredible this beverage is, the way that this is put together. And it's been my favorite since. I go every Black Friday and get all the variants and get a bunch of the beer, and it's something that I just really enjoy. So that without question is my favorite beer. The other part of the question now was my least favorite and favorite styles. Was that the other part? I rambled and I forgot the question.
Least favorite. What are your favorite, least favorite types of beer? And also, is there a particular beer that is your very favorite? So you answered the top part. So now it's types of beer, favorite and least favorite.
Okay, so my favorite type of beer really is situational. As like fucking hipster as that sounds, it is situational. In the wintertime when it's colder, I like stouts and scotch ales the most, just because they have a more warming quality to them. I do really like the pastry stouts that a lot of people are doing now, where it's like, this is a stout, sure, but it's like, we've added cacao nibs and vanilla and graham crackers and marshmallow fluff and like peanuts, and we just threw a bunch of adjunct shit in there, and it's like dessert in a glass. I do really like that. I also really like scotch ales, which is just a very traditional malt heavy warming kind of beer. And then in the summer, I really like IPAs and wheat beers. IPAs that are just very juicy. It's basically like drinking orange juice, which I can't drink all that often because actual orange juice gives me canker sores. IPAs don't. So there you go. But least favorite beers, anything that has mango or guava in it, because those two fruits are disgusting. I don't like sours very much when they're just sour, like if there's not other stuff going on. A lot of times there's like this dick measuring competition in beer of like, I'm gonna, you know, make this the most sour beer I possibly, it's like, this is like drinking Warheads. It's fucking gross. Schwarzbiers, which are German smoked beers. So have you ever had like a food prepared where somebody has put a little too much liquid smoke into it?
Yes.
All right. Imagine drinking that. That's what that's every Schwarzbier that I've ever had. That's what it tastes like to me. Yeah, those are fucking gross. But the beer that I hate the most is American barley wines, because barley wines are supposed to be these very malt forward, sweet, like caramel toffee kind of thing, a very warming drink. They're delicious. English barley wines are incredible. American barley wines, American brewers were like, we're going to put a bunch of bitter hops in there and you're going to get like, you know, it's going to taste like you're fucking eating grass and a Werther's original at the same time. It's going to be great. And it's not. It's fucking gross and nobody should ever do it. There you go. I feel like that was a thorough answer.
I do not like beer, but I do like listening to you talk about it.
Man, I could do this shit for hours. It really is this. I really do encourage people who can responsibly drink or who can handle substances responsibly, to explore the things that are being done with a simple beverage. You know, at the end of the day, it's a very simple process of how to actually make beer, but the artistry and the craft that goes into it is fascinating to me, and it's my way of being able. So I can't go eat at a bunch of 5-star Michelin restaurants, but I can drink a bunch of like interesting beer. So that's how I explore it.
I like that. All right. Well, we have one question left, and it's really the only question that it could possibly be. Scion Storm asks, what bread is the best bread?
Oh, man, I knew this was coming too. And I have flip-flopped on this.
God, me too. It's such a hard question to actually answer, you know?
It really is. It really is. I mean,
I have two in mind. And I've recently come around on the first one, and I think probably the choice, the correct answer is challah, because it's just the right blend of sweet and bread, you know, but it's also, it is such a good piece of bread to put, take two slices of and put a ham and cheese sandwich on, right? This bread still tastes good if you cover it in mustard and meat.
Right.
This bread tastes fantastic when you spread butter on it. And this bread is the best bread to make French toast out of.
Without question.
Hala is amazing. But there is another part of me that wants to say an Atlantic City sub role.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just its own thing. It's not nearly as versatile as Hala. It doesn't fill you with the same heartwarming soul of Hala bread. It's not pretty like a braided Hala bread.
Right.
But it's the fucking perfect sandwich bread.
It really is.
There's just the nice, hard, thick Atlantic City sub roll is just so good. So I am of two minds. I'm like right in the middle of those two. And then like way off in the corner is, and this is a very specific, like for me being a poor kid growing up, the cheapest of all possible wheat breads, like the cheapest conceivable wheat bread dipped in the broth of ramen noodles.
Yeah.
Is just outstanding. That or Elio's pizza, which is not a lot more than cardboard with ketchup, but
but it's something.
It is something. But no, it's Atlantic City sub roll, fresh made challah, and way off on the side, cheap generic Bob brand wheat bread dipped in Maruchan top chicken flavored ramen broth.
Not even creamy chicken. Not even getting that fancy.
I don't fuck with the creamy stuff. I will say that I fuck with the roast stuff, which I don't even know if you can get anymore. But the roast chicken and roast beef flavors were good. So good.
Yeah. You got to step up to some tonkatsu ramen.
I have never delved into the world of proper ramen. I've just never gotten there. I've never actually had real ramen before. I want to someday. The fact that so much of it involves an egg, like, oh, and here's a fucking fried egg slopped on top, pop, here's the yolk. That shit grosses me out. I don't do egg yolks. Just like as a thing, runny eggs are just That is a hard no.
That's my shit right there.
No, that's the closest you're gonna get to me and Dan disagreeing to the death on something.
Yeah, it's the runny egg yolk.
Bringing the food argument.
Yeah,
don't even get me started on mayonnaise.
A complete egg slut.
Yeah, I like my eggs dead. It very, very dead.
No, I like them. I like to know that this is almost a chicken when I'm eating it.
I want to be able to look my eggs in the eye.
That's right. I really do. Fresh out of a chicken's ass and then cracked and like with the runny. Oh, my goodness. Because then you get the toast and you got the fucking eggs in a basket of toads in toad in a hole. Oh, dude. That's where it's at. I'll tell you what bread is not the breast bread. The breast... fuck. I'll tell you what bread is not the best bread. And that, without question, is rye bread. That shit is gross, and I hate it.
Hard disagree. Rye is moving so good.
On. Yeah, moving on. Yeah, food is where you and I will fight to the death about shit. Because you had the palate of a three-year-old.
I did. I've gotten a lot better thanks to my wife.
I can appreciate
the joys of rye bread. It's got to be in the right circumstance, though. See, rye does not have the versatility of something like a challah bread. Because, like,
no.
I mean, rye toast is a thing, but, like, you put...
It's gross, though. It's a gross thing. Put some rye bread and some Swiss... Rye bread and Swiss cheese. Put that shit together.
Oh, my
fucking
God.
Fuck you.
Roast beef and Swiss on rye is delicious.
Nope. I will fucking fight a motherfucker. Bring that shit in front of me. What did I do to offend you? How dare you, asshole?
Especially with the caraway seeds. I like my rye bread with seeds.
That's the worst part. Oh, my God. Tastes like licorice?
Like, what's the point of a seedless? Tastes like licorice? What?
I don't know.
What kind of rye bread are you eating?
It reminds me of fucking licorice. I don't know why. Because black licorice is also gross. So like in my
sure
mind,
you're not
those
eating
things,
Twizzlers?
I don't know. I can't cook. in my mind, those things are close together because they both taste disgusting. And I'm
I'm with you. Black licorice. That's
black licorice and rye bread with caraway seeds fucking occupy the same space in my brain. Like, fuck you. I don't know what I did to piss you off. I'm sorry about it, but we're fighting. So I am of two minds on this as well, because I also agree that Hala is just absolutely incredible. I mean, especially growing up, like, where we grew up in New Jersey, like, and once you were a little bit more in North Jersey and you were in Brooklyn and stuff too, but, like, challah bread from a Jewish bakery is just a different world than challah bread that you might just get at the grocery store, even though that shit's really good too.
It is. It is. When I made my first challah bread, like, I mean, I hadn't experienced, like, the true joys of challah bread until Ferg, right? When he brought us that challah bread at the Pedathon. And I was like, oh my God, this is, oh my. And then I made my own and that shit was amazing. But yeah.
But like, you feel bad for people in the rest of the country that don't ever go to a Jewish bakery. Like, that sucks for you. If you've never been to a Jewish bakery, that's fucking awful. It's just different. It's just different. So, challah bread is so versatile. Challah French toast is just the world, right? I eat challah French toast and I feel like Johnny Depp in Once Upon a Time in Mexico. Like, I have to go kill the chef. I have to. This is too good. But the other one would be just a simple yeast dinner roll. Just a simple yeasty dinner roll that's warm with butter. It's one of those things where you can just, like, I can taste it fucking sitting here saying it out loud. Also because I'm chubby and I always have been. So every time I mention food, I'm like, good, fuck, I've got to go eat now.
Dinner rolls.
But yeah,
simple dinner roll. There,
a simple yeast, a risen yeast dinner roll. And it's got to be that, like, even if you get them frozen, like ShopRite, Acme, fucking Pathmark or Grand Union, depending on how old you are.
Go Publix, to the Super Fresh or the shopping bag.
Shopping bag, the, oh God, what else is it? Stop and Go, Publix, Piggly Wiggly, if you're a fan. But even Walmart, down south, Target.
Food Lion.
Food Lion. Wegmans, H-E-B, if you're out in Texas. See how many grocery stores we can run through now. I think I'm out. I think H-E-B was the last pull I had.
Acme, I said IGA. Acme.
Oh, IGA, that was the other one.
IGA. Yeah,
IGA Superstores. Anyway, if you go in there in the frozen section, you can get them, but they're the type that
Food
you have
Town.
To...
Remember Food Town?
Oh, shit, I do.
sorry, go on.
I feel like there's something, like, what we're doing here is somewhat classist, because there's a bunch of grocery stores that we haven't mentioned above us and below our station in life, and we're probably pissing somebody off, but whatever.
God, I wish I could remember the names of the ones I used to shop at in Brooklyn, but they'd, like... I just remember where they were, right? I was like, well, I'm not going all the way out to the path or the Pathmark, so I'm just going to go to this store, which is over on that direction. So, fuck
yeah. Em. Yeah, fuck. So, but if you get them at the grocery store, you have to, they're the ones that you have to, like, sit out and rise. Like, you can't just pop them in the oven.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about dinner rolls that have to rise first are just spectacular. It's just one of my very, very favorite things. It's one of those, like, you know, I never understood the, like, the breadsticks at Olive Garden. Like, they're good, but they're not a dinner roll.
Yeah, that's another, I will definitely say that I've been to Olive Garden and I have never had any experience at Olive Garden that raises above, like, the most mediocre of mediocrity. Like,
yeah, 100%.
The breadsticks just don't do it for me. And, like, no, this isn't a classist thing. I fucking love Applebee's.
Sure. No.
Like, I'll eat at Chili's all day. It's nothing against chain restaurants. It's fucking Olive Garden just does nothing for me.
Give me some fucking riblets.
you want to talk about bread. You talk about the Cheddar Bay biscuits at Red Lobster. Oh my God.
That's a whole other world. That's not even bread. That's just fucking sex. didn't ask us what our favorite type of sex was. It would have been cheddar made biscuits.
Pillowy wads of sex served to you in a
piping hot right before you get some lobster. That's a good way to fucking go, man.
That's how I want to die. I want the Admiral's feast right now, the ultimate feast right in front of me. Cheddar made biscuits.
That's it. I'm done. I'm good. With some juicy juice, you fucking in heaven.
Side train about bread at restaurants. There was this restaurant, I'm sure it's still there because it was amazing. It was right by my house in Elmwood Park, maybe. I don't remember where the hell I was. It must have been Elmwood Park, but there was Elmwood Park, because the restaurant was the Twisted Elm, and they had decent bread, and I mean like solid decent bread, not like oh my god, this is best bread ever, but it's not like shitty dinner rolls or something. Like, they had decent bread, but they served it with everything butter, which was butter with everything bagel just mixed into it, you know?
Yeah, that's good shit.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah, that's stupid and unfair.
God, I love bread.
I mean, God, we didn't even talk about tortillas, too, because, like, dude, not for nothing, living in Texas for a little while, like, fresh, handmade tortillas.
Yeah.
When we toured down to Southwest
to my band Chocolat, we went down there and I ate at a Mexican restaurant down there. I was like, oh my god, this is not what I'm used to. This is amazing. Tortillas.
There's a little place up in Marlton, in up by where I live. That's just like a little hole-in-the-wall Mexican joint, and I can't even remember the name of it off the top of my head. They just changed their name. I can't remember the fucking old name or new name, which is not helpful to anyone who might frequent this establishment. But it is just a hole-in-the-wall. It's in a strip mall, and it is the best Mexican food I've had, including being in Texas, which is sacrilegious to most people, but it is just fucking real, and they have tortillas there that are just out of this world. But no, it's either risen dinner rolls or challah bread, and I think I do lean challah bread because it's just more versatile.
Yeah, I think it wins the points for being able to do more things.
Yeah,
similar to what you were saying, North Jersey bagels, because we also didn't talk about bagels.
Oh my god, but that's a whole other thing.
My favorite, just the bagel base in, I don't even remember what town it is, but it was near my house in Elmwood Park. Every time I would go up there back before, you know, when I could go visit friends and stuff back in the before times, but anytime I'd go up and visit Mike Sheridan, I would always make a detour to go over by my old apartment and grab some bagels from the bagel base. Just out of this world. So good.
Yeah. Gotta people who don't bread. Live in the Northeast, missing out.
Love bread.
Yeah.
Well, that was fun, huh?
That was fun.
Good job, everybody.
Yeah, you guys did a good job.
Thank you very much for those questions, folks. That was a good time.
Join us next week when we do another AMA, because we don't have enough. No, we'll come up with something.
Yeah, no, that's going to be our show. But yeah, we have absolutely no idea what we're going to talk about next week.
It'll be something holiday related, though. No, fuck, we didn't even talk about you watching Scrooged for the first time. I can't believe that is a sentence that I just said. That
I don't know. It was all right.
Sacrilege. I don't know.
I didn't grow up with it. That movie was so incredibly of its time. Like,
oh god, is it?
Wow, that movie just it just oozes 80s, and
yeah, it's so good.
I laughed, but I never laughed harder than at the very beginning. That opening sequence with the Santa death movie with the $60 million man or whatever, like the $6 million man, that was like
outstanding.
Conflating it with friggin' Vash the Stampede, $60 billion man. That made me laugh hard. And then, like, I still enjoyed the movie, but it was like, after it was over, I was like, this isn't going to become one of my all-time holiday classics. It was a damn sight better than what we watched the day before, a few days before. We watched, because everyone been talking about that Christmas Chronicles movie on Netflix with Russ. That was the blandest freaking white bread ass movie I had ever seen. That's, we were both like, well, I mean, it's a movie and things are happening in it, but And it, when it came to the big, like, musical sequence in the prison, I'm just like, are you kidding me? could you stop, please? Like, Kurt Russell was a joy to watch in the movie. But
sure.
Even that wasn't enough to just get over the fact that it was just so bad.
That it wasn't Jingle All the Way? The Arnold Schwarzenegger yelling Turbo Man?
I've never actually seen that one.
Oh, my God. It's so bad, but I love it. Sinbad is one of my very favorite comedians of all time.
Yeah, we did watch Muppet Family Christmas last night, which is my top tier Christmas movie, right up there next to National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. But Muppet Family Christmas, if you've never heard of it, listeners at home, this was a TV special that was at the time, and I think still is, the only thing that has Muppets, Sesame Street, Muppet Babies, Fraggle Rock, and Jim Henson himself all in the same place.
It's pretty great.
It's amazing. And it's got some really solid jokes in it. Like, there's a Guy Smiley bit talking about barometers that is just, it's just pure comedy. You see it coming from a mile away and it doesn't matter. It is absolutely hysterical. It still works. Running gags, Swedish Chef trying to cook Big Bird. I mean, it's like, it's really good stuff. I highly recommend tracking it down. It's not on a lot of things, and a lot of the places where you can get it in America are edited, because apparently there were some weird rights issues with some Christmas songs, which is bizarre. But
Who owns Christmas songs? Fucking Grinch.
But there are, you know, nefarious means to get the full version of it in pretty decent quality, and I highly recommend it if you have any love for any of those properties. Kermit the Frog talking to a bunch of Muppets is Fraggles is just like,
it's pretty great.
Next, Jim Henson's in the kitchen doing dishes. You just want to hug the whole goddamn movie. Anyway, that's our show.
I think what we're going to do next week, Chris, I'm going to talk this out right now.
Okay,
we are going to pick 2 to 3 classic Christmas movies that should be made into video games. What type of game? And the studio that's going to make it.
I love it.
That's our topic for next week.
Should be made into games. What was it?
What kind of game and who should be making it? So Way Forward and Drinkbox are making all of them.
Oh, I love this idea. This is fantastic. Okay, cool. Perfect. All right.
Done.
Well done. The Stone Age. I don't have to play pad for another week.
Another sad, padless existence for you for a week.
The Stone Age Gamer Podcast is a part of Geekade.com. We're on most social media platforms if you want to get
This is really how we do it, guys. Chris texts me and he's like, what are we talking about this week? I'm like, I don't know, give me 5 minutes. And I just spit something stupid out. We're like, yeah, let's go with that.
Yeah, we can do that.
And it's gonna be 2 hours and it's gonna be awesome. Very excited about it.
We're on most social media platforms, and if you want to get in touch with us, we are very difficult to find. All it takes is a quick look at our show notes, and you'll see links to our social media accounts, as well as all manner of other fun stuff, like a link to our namesake, StoneAgeGamer.com, who is, I think, having a winter sale right now, or did a couple days ago. The
Geekade Patreon, very disappointed in us.
Let's keep the show running week after week, and more useful links than you can shake a joystick at. This show's theme song, Squared Roots. Oh my god, joystick. I watched that G4 reunion special. Did you see that?
No, I didn't. Was it any good?
It was pretty good. I mean, it wasn't spectacular, but it's sure. I just missed hearing. I follow Adam Sessler on Twitter, and he's like, he's super so grumpy, great. And that's great. But, like, I miss hearing him be grumpy, and that was really nice.
I not for nothing. I know they got a lot of shit there at the end of it, but Attack of the Show was a good watch. I enjoyed it. I like Kevin Pereira. I like Olivia Munn.
Yeah,
I mean, Morgan Webb.
That channel introduced me to Ninja Warrior, man. That was good stuff. I don't know how I feel about them coming back. Seems like a really bad idea in the age of the internet, like, to come back as a cable channel, but... Hey, man.
Yeah, like as a YouTube channel, that makes way more sense to me. but
yeah, that could be a thing. I mean, it depends. Like, I don't know how far back they're going. Like, this whole thing was just about like X-Play and Attack the Show and a little bit of cheat. But like, yeah. I remember when that shit launched and it was like, remember Cinematech, where cool. It was just like, here's a bunch of cinema scenes from random ass games, or
that was cool. Icons was cool.
Good. I know
they're having Austin Creed, who wrestles as Xavier Wood or Xavier Woods. I know he's involved with it, and he is a hardcore gamer. His YouTube channel, Up Up Down Down, is great. A lot of wrestlers doing like video games, like they play Street Fighter a lot, and like he's done tournaments like against Kenny Omega, and like dudes and girls that work in other promotions and stuff. So if whatever he is involved in will be awesome. As far as the rest of it, I don't know, but I'll watch it, you know? I'll support it.
I'll follow that. Yeah. Anyway, this show's theme song, Squared Roots, was written by Banjo Guy Ali. You can learn all about his wonderful music and more by following the link to his YouTube channel, also in the show notes. And finally, as always, we'd like to thank our intrepid editor, Evan, for making this show listenable for all you folks. And we'd like to thank all you folks for listening in the first place. That's it, everybody. Thanks for sticking around this long. I don't even know how long this episode was. On behalf of Dan and myself, keep playing games.